Recording? Okay, yep. Do a sound sync. Sound sync now. Okay.
Right. So, Mark, pleasure to be in your office here. And I have a strong interest in Bitcoin. And I've been reading about it. It's not easy to comprehend. I know you've been engaged with Bitcoin for 6 years. And therefore, I've put down here a total of 21 questions which kept coming to me in different ways, and I'm looking for your good responses there. So the first, can the value, I wrote them in alphabetical order, can the value keep going up and up, or could there be a sudden huge crash like the banks in 2007?
That's a really difficult question, Chris. I've divided up into two answers that readily spring to mind. The price at this junction point is possibly an S-curve adoption, which hasn't been seen since post-World War I Germany, when the Deutschmark was 4.5 Deutschmarks to a dollar, but then rose to 13.5 million Deutschmarks to the dollar at the end of the Weimar Republic. However, we've got a bit of an event that's hanging over us in the Bitcoin world like a looming cloud. On the 29th of October, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange announced that they would be offering futures in Bitcoin prices. That means that there'd be a market where people can bet on what the price might be in the future. So I've theorised, and I think other people have theorised, that if this information had, say, been linked to dinner parties or lunches 6 to 8 weeks prior to the public announcement, the cash settled derivatives that's going to be, friends have had the opportunity to purchase around $4,000 of Bitcoin. Okay, so Bitcoin was sort of around those prices about a couple of weeks, months before that announcement, which means that those people could have made sizable block purchases of Bitcoin, say between 100 million and 500 million block purchases, that wouldn't necessarily have gone through the normal Bitcoin exchanges. So you wouldn't have even actually seen those price movements, because a lot of Bitcoin sales are conducted off exchange. In the financial world, that's called OTC, that's called over the counter. So it's allowed those people to perhaps be betting that Bitcoin will maybe be $8,000 on the 3rd of January, and then if all their mates all sell that week, the price will be 8,000, because they're just going to drive the price down. So those futures will come into being worth money, even though the price at the moment is about $20,000. So my little formula here, so say they manage to bet on their futures that if they make the price worth $8,000 in January, they could be up 10 million if they place that amount of bets on the CME. But then if they dump their Bitcoin that they bought for that they bought at 4,000, and they put in 20 million, those 4,000 into 200 million would have bought them 50 Bitcoin, and then that will net them about 9.8 million in profit just through dumping their Bitcoin from 20 down to 8. And then on top of that, to compound it, they're going to get, I don't know, another 5-10 million from the futures. So on 200 million, they've recouped maybe 20 million in less than 6 months. So that's why I got out of the market before Christmas, and why I'm not happy to go back into Bitcoin until the middle of January. Historically, Bitcoin has always had a low point mid-January for the last couple of years. But overall, Bitcoin is likely to go up, because there are things that aren't known about in the public domain of what's going to drive Bitcoin going forward in the future. Because currently at the moment, say for example, I sold £800 worth of Bitcoin for somebody, and it cost £12.50 just to move it. So moving small amounts of Bitcoin at the moment really just isn't practical. So at the moment, it's what some regard as a store of value, not as a currency. But with the new technology that is going into Bitcoin, and the bedrock went in quite recently, it will allow Bitcoin to be exchanged in very small amounts, mm-hmm. almost instantaneously, and at very small fees. Mm. And then that's where Bitcoin takes on a notion of cash.
Yeah, I get you.
Yes, because at the moment it isn't practical to pay for a coffee in Bitcoin. It used to be when Bitcoin was smaller.
Yeah, but now it's another.
But now it's not.
So we go through question two. Thanks for that, Mark. Chinese governments have stopped the use of Bitcoin. Why is that?
No, they haven't.
They haven't.
They haven't. Oh, right. No. They have temporarily banned exchanges and ICOs, initial coin offerings, based on blockchain technologies. They had a wobble some time back on allowing Bitcoin exchanges, and they did shut temporarily. Mm. So the same thing is likely to happen. And I think there's a relationship between Bitcoin and fintech companies in China that have a party member as a director and those that don't.
Mm.
So that if a party member happens to be a director of one of these fintech companies, I think it's more likely that they're going to get re-licensed and re-permitted.
So we might see some change later on.
I think we'll see some change, especially given the fact that in Asia we've got South Korea, Japan, and Singapore that are very pro these new technologies.
All right, good. Could it be the biggest bubble in history?
The only comparison we've got is post-war Germany. The tulip reference is the biggest misrepresented story out. People were betting on tulip prices futures next year.
Yeah.
They weren't buying tulips for next year. They were betting on the prices of what next year's going to be. So in very much way, the public got suckered into actually buying future prices, which is completely different to owning the underlying asset.
Mm.
The people who are currently buying Bitcoin now are actually buying Bitcoin.
Yeah. So there's not any speculative about the future prices?
Correct. So it's a different type of gamble.
Yes. All right.
So that's how I see it at the moment.
Good. Very good. I would imagine that the governments must be, big governments and small governments, looking at this market of the Bitcoin and wondering how they can get in for taxes and to regulate and anything else. Or even the banks.
Yes. You say, the question was, could there be any regulation regulatory intervention? Well, first of all, in the UK, because we have to treat it by each regulatory environment as to where you are, we already have a very clear taxation system that was pronounced by HMRC in 2014. And I have since gone back and tried to re-clarify that with my local tax office. Mm. And to a larger or greater extent, it's down to you to interpret what the current situation is.
Mm.
If it's Bitcoin, it's definitely liable to capital gains.
Mm.
If it's not Bitcoin, then it's counted as gambling. But with the proviso, I said to the tax office, well, surely if a cryptocurrency is readily tradable in an EU market, then actually it must fall under the same regulatory guidelines.
Yeah.
So Bitstamp, our biggest European exchange, now will trade Ethereum and I think it's some other cryptocurrencies.
Mm.
So therefore they, in my interpretation of the HMRC ruling of 2014, will fall under the same capital gains boundaries. So I think the question of taxation as far as the UK government will be, if it's readily tradable by UK nationals via an exchange which has some form of European regulation, I think it's fair to say that we are you're tax liable.
And what the corporate gains tax at the moment, capital gains?
Capital gains tax is 40%.
40%.
But as an individual, you're allowed £20,000 per annum.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Without tax?
Without tax, yeah.
Well, that's good, isn't it?
It is good.
Yeah. All right.
So just going back to readdressing the question you originally wrote.
Yeah.
Well, if we have anything that's tried to be prohibitive, whether it's the war on drugs or alcohol in the 20s in America, then that would be great for price. The problems that we might have is if governments join together and they go after the electricity supplies, which provide the massive electricity to the industry, which is all going through hydroelectricity suppliers. So that's how they can realistically cripple Bitcoin. They can't realistically cripple it any other way. Long term, I think that cryptocurrencies will not be banned in any shape or form, because politicians need a way of being bribed. So they will leave loopholes. Because turkeys don't vote for Christmas. So I can't see I can't see any other way. We're going to go down digital cash. I think it's Sweden basically have made it so that by 2023 it's so expensive to use cash in the shops, shopkeepers will no longer take cash. And there are other one or two other countries that are looking to take that model and are going down that route.
So what you see in terms of the not so much in the long term, but over, let's say, the next 5, 10, 20 years, a reduction in the cash we carry in our wallets to a card system that we have already, the Visa card.
Yeah.
And then that's going to go another step further to digital currency?
For everything. Yes.
Everything.
For everything. Yes.
But that if it goes along that way, that surely would accelerate the price of Bitcoin a lot, wouldn't it? The value? If it started really going in that way.
Yes.
Because that becomes the norm. Sorry.
I left my phone on.
No problem. But just to... Sorry.
Let's switch that off.
But surely in this banking capitalist system, there would be massive resistance from the banks in terms of allowing it to go to digital currency, because there's not going to be that much use for them, or less use.
Well, you've got to have a look at what the function of a bank at the moment is. It really isn't there for cashing up small change for small shopkeepers. It's about risk management. Banks are about risk management. And if we go beyond the average small business, it's about whether a business gets a loan or not, and the management of that loan and that loan repayment. So I think there'll always be a future for banks. The other thing is that the managing of cryptocurrencies is phenomenally complicated, and essentially Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies are allowing people to create their own bearer bonds. Because essentially with Bitcoin and many cryptocurrencies, you can actually put your cryptocurrency on a piece of paper, and that is it. You lose that, you've lost it. And traditionally the public have not been used to this sort of thing for hundreds of years.
No.
They haven't carried their gold and silver around as their principal asset. The bank has always looked after that for them. So without going down a rabbit hole of the history of money, I think the banks still have a massive part to play.
So it's not a huge threat. It must be some threat, but not a huge one.
It's a change of direction for banks, and they're going to have to rethink the way that they operate, not even necessarily their business model.
So then the next question is, because a friend was telling me what happened to a friend of his, that he had put business money into Bitcoin, he then had money transferred into his account, the bank thought it could be laundered money or fraud or whatever, and then immediately froze the account.
Yes. But that's pretty much the same.
Is that rare or
it's commonplace. You can move as little as £700 and the money get flagged. When Beth was buying some Bitcoin in the early days, She merely bought 700 quid's worth and it got frozen, and it required a call to actually move it and say, yeah, I really did need to pay this person.
All right. So my, say, going into the bank, put it on the card, they all know me, transfer some money, Bitcoin or whatever,
yeah.
The fact that it should go through. All right.
Well, it's very slightly differently.
No.
If you use Bitstamp, which is our biggest exchange in Europe,
yeah.
It's got all the banking and finance tickets for the EU. And and because they've
give
got
some protection.
So, well, it's not so much protection. I think they work under the EU banking deposit scheme, which gives you protection up to, I think it's 80 or 85,000, which is a euro bit of legislation. I'm sure that they will have a foreign exchange license,
mm-hmm.
and the other one that you need to run a Bitcoin exchange is a gambling license.
Uh-huh.
To do with anti-money laundering. So if you actually wanted to run a Bitcoin exchange in the UK, you'd need to have the foreign exchange license, you need a gambling license, and you need a bank account.
Yeah.
But getting all those is incredibly difficult at the moment, because although the Bank of England really support fintech startups, the high street banks have not traditionally let them have a bank account, even though the directive from government is to say we want British fintech companies to get going.
All right, okay.
Yes. Yep, so that's been a bit of a bone of contention.
Mm.
So if you're private trading, which is completely HMRC legal, some UK high street banks will give you 30 days notice if they think that you're trading.
Mm.
Even though it's not illegal, there are two banks in this country which have actually given people 30 days notice, and that's happened in the last year.
Mm.
So that's why increasingly you've got to deal with the big approved exchanges.
All right. Yeah. Okay. The question number six here: how do I keep track of the change in value of my bitcoins? What do I have to do?
There's a little utility on my phone called Blockfolio, which I put on my Android phone, which I believe is quite a good one. I've not used it. I've written a custom spreadsheet that looks up the price when I fire it up. That's how I do it. But
all right,
yeah.
So all right, but that's for the ordinary punter.
Yeah.
They may not have, this, like me and others, wouldn't have the skill to write a custom spreadsheet.
Well, you can just put an app on your phone and it will give you a ready conversion rate in sterling.
Oh, all right.
So I'll switch my phone off.
Okay, but sometimes, yeah. All right, maybe,
so,
all right.
So it is relatively easy.
Relatively, okay. And basically, it would state what the sum, which was initially whatever deposited there, and what it is today.
We can just put Blockfolio on your phone and type in the amount of Bitcoin that you bought.
Yeah,
yeah. And right. Not just that, it will track what your gain is and everything.
Good. Yeah. How do I know what I am buying is safe? I did read online that this is like 2 or 3 years ago, people put some money, it was a bit of a scam, and they kind of lost it.
Yeah. I've done an introductory how-to website called cointales.com. That's COINTALES, cointales.com. And I've got two sections on buying. One is buying for the short term, and one is buying for the long term.
Sorry to interrupt. What's a short term in terms of time? What's a long term in terms of time?
Short term might be 2 or 3 years. Long term might be sticking it into a pension or a pension block and just leaving it until you retire.
Oh.
And you don't have to leave it until you retire. The only people currently at the moment, as of December 2017 in the UK, who are offering any sort of Bitcoin exposure are a company called Hargreaves Lansdown. And they've got a product called the Vantage SIP, which will allow you exposure in three Bitcoin funds.
Mm.
So they are able to invest your pension or a section of it into a Bitcoin fund, which works and tracks an index of the price of Bitcoin. And the best thing about buying Bitcoin through your pension is that for every £80 that you put in, the government will give you 20% back.
Mm.
So even as a non-taxpayer, you can put in 2,800 each year, and you'll get, and that will get topped up to 3,600.
Well,
even for a non-taxpayer. Major thing to point out about doing it as a pension scheme is, even if you've got a pension, it doesn't matter. You can open one of these Hargreaves pensions, and you can pull out a little bit from another pie that you've got and put it in that.
Mm.
Just one last thing about pensions. If you've not paid into your pension at all, but you have been earning, you can back pay up to 7 years of what you could have paid, going back 7 years in time.
Wow.
So this is a really, really good way to do it.
If you take people like me who've gone past our sell by date, gone past 65, haven't yet had to touch the pension, so the pot of it is kind of gathering over 6 or 7 years. Would it be worthwhile kind of doing what you just said with this? Put to siphon some of it towards Bitcoin or not?
Because it means that, say, for example, you were to go to your existing pension pot, open an Advantage it with Hargreaves Lansdown, raid 10 grand from one of your other pensions, put it into that the Hargreaves vehicle.
Yeah.
If you made a lot and gain in Bitcoin goes absolutely astronomic, it means it will be capital gains free. So that when you decide to take your pension and take it out, it's all capital gains free.
Wow. Boy. Interesting. Well, so we go to the next question, if I may. How do you pay taxes with Bitcoin?
Bitcoin.
Is it only when it comes into your account you take it?
You only... If you trade in Bitcoin continuously, then you're liable to income tax because you're using it as a form of income.
Mm.
And that, so if you trade in Bitcoin, it falls under their 2014 ruling. If you trade continuously, trading is liable to standard income tax.
So this,
if you buy and hold, then it's liable to capital gains on exit when you finally sell.
All right. And you said it was 40%.
Yes, it's 40% at the end.
At the end of it.
Yes, that's why doing it as a pension is a far better vehicle.
Wow. Yes. Oops, sorry.
With the Hargreaves Lansdown account, you can actually trade the Bitcoin within your pension fund.
Gosh.
And because you're trading it within your pension fund, that isn't liable to income tax.
Wow.
Because since I started the pension, my Bitcoin tracker in my pension fund,
yes,
I traded it.
Wow.
And I came up 20% on top of the doubling that I did for the 8 weeks I had it in there.
Wow. How does one get the profits back into one's account? What's the procedure?
The best way to do it is to put your Bitcoin back into Bitstamp. So when we buy the Bitcoin that you're thinking of buying short term, we're going to pull it offline and put it into a paper wallet, which I suggest most people do, is print out 3 copies. You keep one copy, copy to a relative, and another copy somewhere else.
Yeah.
Okay? So when you come back to sell it, we'll then put those Bitcoin back onto your Bitstamp account.
Yeah.
And we'll sell it on the Euro market part of Bitstamp, and then you can withdraw your Euros back to your Sterling bank account.
Yeah.
But it has to be in your named account as per your ID documents on Bitstamp.
I got it.
That's because Bitstamp are going down the completely legal route for what's known as KYC, which is Know Your Customer.
Oh, right. Okay. I get you. Good. And that transition from the Bitcoin, Bitstamp into the account, that can just be a percentage of, let's say, one decided to take out.
Yeah, you have to do the whole thing.
No, you don't have to do the whole thing.
You just take out whatever.
All right, good. How easy and safe is it for the beginner to be able to invest? Let's say there's been all this publicity, and the person says, yeah, I've got a bit of extra money. It's worth putting in. How do they start? How does, what's the
minefield. That's why I put the website together.
Oh, right. So the minefield...
It is a minefield. I think you're absolutely right. Yeah. It is a minefield. Yeah.
All right. So...
It's not easy.
No, no, no. Especially for those of us who are... All right.
My wife's such a ring, she wouldn't have a clue.
No. And I would be more clueless, I think, on these things.
You said how easy and how safe it is to invest.
Yes.
It's not very easy in the short term. The long term route is the best way, as a UK citizen, is to stuff it in that pension plan. It's by far the safest route.
Right.
And I would advocate, as somebody who is not a financial independent financial advisor, I'm not qualified. No. Don't put in everything that you've got. You may choose to put in something. And hope that it does quite well. We've never experienced this sort of thing ever.
No.
This is a completely unprecedented investment vehicle we've never ever seen before, and we're never likely to see in our lifetimes.
Wow. Wow. When you said a few minutes ago, because I thought short term was weeks or months, but you said it's even years, isn't it, short term? What would be long term, like 10, 20 years?
Well,
or more?
If we look at what's happened, we've gone up tenfold this year.
Yeah.
And I think that if we start the year at about $20,000, if we don't have a bit of a decline at the beginning, I think personally, conservatively, we won't see Bitcoin next year sitting at anything less than $100,000. And that would be really, really conservative. I think we could quite easily see the end of next year sitting at $500,000. Mm. But it's important to imagine that the price of Bitcoin isn't priced in dollars, it's priced in Bitcoin. One Bitcoin is worth one Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And it's not that the value of Bitcoin is going up, it's the value of the dollar is going down.
Ah.
So that's a huge mistake that most people make.
Yes, of course.
It's not that Bitcoin is going up in value, it's a question that the dollar is going down in value.
Whoa. All right.
So short term, I think that's a short term price at the end of next year. At the end of 2019, we will be looking at the $1 million mark.
Gosh. I asked how often should one check one's Bitcoin account. I read that people who doing online banking, I do, but I check my online banking maybe once a month. Some people are doing it every day.
Personally, if you're going to buy and hold, I reckon just look at it once a quarter, just out of interest.
Oh, really? Yeah. So just forget it?
Don't even bother. Forget it.
Yeah, all right. Okay. is it important to know how Bitcoin works? Everything that you say right now has been very helpful. I look at your website and other websites, but... The other banking situations, I don't know much about banking, I just put my money in, take my money out, just see what the interest rate is, and that's enough. Or is it not enough for Bitcoin?
It's a big open-ended question, and I just sort of put on my notes, I said, well, yes and no. Do you know where money comes from?
No.
And how fractional reserve banking works?
Not a clue.
So it's a really different... So that's a topic in its own right for maybe another Q&A.
All right, okay. is it more risky than stocks and shares?
Yes, in terms of volatility. My personal belief in the medium term until 2027, 2030 is no.
And why in the, of course, in the forecast and in the prediction, are you looking, say, 10 to 13 years ahead?
Because I think that people will perceive the value of money differently around 2027, 2030, that sort of time out in 10 years' time. I think we'll look at money fundamentally differently in 10 years' time, because all the Western governments around the world will be struggling to keep law and order.
Yeah.
Because as automation bikes into society, in America they're looking at about, I think it's about 37% of jobs going through automation. We are looking at between 27 and 30% in Britain and Germany over the next 10 years. So we're looking at the introduction of the UBI in order to keep the universal basic income. We're looking on different ways of looking at social welfare to avoid riots. Okay, so where's the tax going to come from to look after the welfare state when the big corporations aren't paying any tax, the medium corporations aren't paying any tax, and the small companies that maybe employ 10 to 50 people actually are going to break down into what Charles Handy coined as the empty raincoat. We're going to be lots of people who are working on our own, part of 50 people organisations, and we aren't going to be paying any tax either.
God, so no money coming in, it's a recipe for anarchy.
Yeah, because essentially you as a bright independent individual, you base around your life paying as little as tax as possible. I can quite happily live off 10-15,000 quid a year. What more do I need?
Yeah.
But the tax system has made it such as people like me actually can't be bothered to run businesses. There is no point. I have no motivation to run a business in a high tax society.
No.
We're recording, Beth, so excuse me, can you have to rearrange the camera?
Sorry.
It's gone off anyway, we'll just have to rely on your sound, Chris.
Eh?
We'll have to rely on your sound if everything stops recording.
Oh, alright, yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes only.
Is that me or is that somebody else?
No.
I don't know, the battery's probably gone flat.
Wow. Yeah, the recording.
Recording's
fine.
Yes, good old solid recording.
Yes.
So, going back to we're looking at wholesale problems in the tax system. So I think that's why I put a question mark on the value of money 10 years out.
But I can't see how Bitcoin could make any difference to that, because the intention still would be to avoid paying tax, wouldn't it? That wouldn't make any difference to this, the reality of tax avoidance and the impact on society.
The change in society that Bitcoin is reaping is who has the wealth.
But then the big buyers have the big wealth, and they got Bitcoin and the
those people won't be able to keep up with the early adopters who are already looking 5 years into the future.
So do you feel that more and more people in the lower income, if they can use some of their hard earned savings in Bitcoin, that it will significantly increase their income? I mean, they'll be better off. Do you see what I mean? Now my grandson puts in £40.
It depends. I mean, I think at this point in time, I think if somebody's able to put £10,000 into Bitcoin, they probably bought their financial security for life. I think that's where we
quite feasible.
Quite feasible. But by the end of next year, then they won't be able to. Because there are a lot of people at the moment talking about being able to get in for 0.1 of a Bitcoin. If you've got 0.1 of a Bitcoin, you're actually probably set up for life.
Gosh. So, in a way, your prediction is that we're in the beginning of a big wave of transition, of increase in the value of the Bitcoin. That it kind of, last 2 months, there's been massive publicity in a way that there never was before.
But it's still nothing.
And it's still nothing?
Yeah, because we're looking at what's known as an S-curve adoption. So, if we look at the S-curve on the board that we're drawing,
yeah,
that's the S-curve, and we're about there.
Wow. So it's peanuts.
It's peanuts. But it all depends on where at the end of next year it occurs before it goes asymptotic.
Wow. So your 10 to 13 year prediction on that S curve there, where do you think that kind of gradient?
We've got there by the by 2027.
Is that right? Gun smacking.
Maybe.
Yeah, of course. But that is in the realm of possibility. What would be the S curve in the last year? I mean,
the S curve in the last year has just been this.
Gee, this is phenomenal.
There are a number of people who I've managed to get into the retirement zone in Totnes because they listened to me.
Yeah.
5 years ago.
Yeah. Exactly. So
at the end of next year, they will have enough in their.
Yeah, they can retire.
Mm. Well, not retire, just never have to worry about money. Yeah, they could do, but just never have to worry about money.
No, right. Well, good on them. I never had to worry about money because I have not a worrying time. I just flow along.
Since life has changed for me, it allows you to think about the world differently if you're not worrying about
exactly
money.
That.
You can think about what you can give with your time.
Yeah.
In a completely different way. If
that's
you're not
true.
Worried about how you're going to fill up the car with fuel,
exactly.
How you're going to pay the credit card bill at the end of the month, and things like that, you have to think.
It's a big relief.
Well, hold on a minute. I don't have to worry about that. Actually,
no.
I can just go out tomorrow and actually just. Wander off and do something.
But as we know, there are plenty of people who don't have to worry about money and yet are not wandering off and doing something. They're still working their butts off. And they've got nice hats.
But this is a reflection on that big society doesn't work.
Yeah.
Mm. Obviously, people aren't getting a big enough kick out of the voluntary sector and what they can get out of life by giving their time.
Yeah.
And there are huge problems with the level of wealth that this is going to create, I think.
If you just take your place for whenever I come here, there's always people in here, you're chatting away, that's all sorts of issues, global, social, personal, or whatever. But somebody working in an office, they are slaves to that screen. Mm. They can't just chat to people who drop in. You know, a friend of mine working in the Amazon warehouse, I may have mentioned this to you, and Bozo, whatever his name is, now apparently the richest person in the world, or one of them.
Yes, yep.
And so this.
He didn't get it from Amazon either. He got it from the CIA. Amazon actually doesn't run into profit. The only profitable bit of Amazon actually is the money he gets from the CIA. Mm. And initially, when he did the first CIA deal for the CIA to be able to use some of the Amazon cloud technology, he then went off and bought the New York Times.
Mm.
So he's a very powerful, scary individual.
Oh yeah, very, very. And so the person's working in Germany, she's in the Amazon warehouse, racing up and down, you know, getting everything in, and there are people and cameras watching everybody. He stopped for a few seconds talking to somebody who's going up and down the corridor there, and there was a message, call down, please come to the office. Called in and said, you're wasting company time, this is your first warning. He wasn't speaking for half a minute to somebody.
I can do one better than that. I used to do the couriering job to cover when people didn't pay the rent here.
Yeah.
We had an instance whereby it was obvious that somebody from India had actually checked whether we had actually posted a parcel through a letterbox in What's the street down off Ticklemore Street? What's off the one that runs off Ticklemore Street? Anyway, at the bottom, yeah. Of town. And because I don't know whether it was myself or Chris, we'd actually handed it to the customer through the door. We'd just put letterbox on the gun. But Amazon are actually employing people, it would appear, I'm guessing here in Suppersville.
So it's Amazon again doing the same
thing. Doing the same thing. And because there wasn't a letterbox big enough to put the parcel through, they obviously went against the courier company and said, we're not paying it because it couldn't have possibly gone through the letterbox. But Chris and I both knew that we had actually given the person that parcel and they had received it. But that Amazon had actually got out and got a rebate on that courier delivery.
Gee.
Because they'd rather pay somebody 20p to double check whether the letterbox is valid enough to put a parcel through.
I mean, in a way, it's corporate control, corporate surveillance, and it's a way of making sure people totally focused there to maximise their profit. It's all about control, isn't it? I mean, you wouldn't last 10 minutes if Amazon had a camera on you in this place.
No.
No. Slackers are us. So, back to the agenda.
All right. They're there. Okay, we're up to number 15 here. So.
Oh, no, we haven't got...
We're good?
15.
Okay, yeah. Number 15 there. So, you and I have spoken previously about open source and it's decentralized, everybody kind of makes it happen in their own way. Is there any parallel with Bitcoin, since it's not a central banking system governing the...
Well, Bitcoin's protocol is open source.
Oh.
So the way in which Bitcoin does work is publicly out there.
Yeah. So
if we compare that to the way maybe the banking system works... Mm. And I've just pulled out a couple of articles which are quite mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm.
The Bank of International Settlements discovered quite recently that global debt may be underreported by $14 trillion. This last week, a economics professor at Michigan State University has found that the American government... between 1998 and 2015 have misspent $21 trillion. This isn't beer money. Okay, this has major impacts on the world. Now, the first one that I pointed out, the Bank of International Settlements, about the missing $14 trillion, that they analysed the foreign exchange swaps between big financial institutions, and they discovered, it's like, well, where did it come from?
Yeah.
Money that came from nowhere.
Gosh.
Deutsche Bank is sitting on $36 trillion, £36 million, not dollars, million pounds, in risky derivatives, and that came from a Daily Express article.
Yes.
Not known for its fine financial journalism, but we can pretty much ascertain that it wasn't a made-up figure and a made-up story.
Mm.
So that is putting huge pressure on the European Union, because we know that Italy is in a huge financial pickle.
Yeah.
We know that France is in a huge financial pickle, and we know that Germany's Deutsche Bank is in a huge financial pickle. I personally think that this is why we have a yes minister do nothing policy with regards to the European Union breakup. If we do nothing, the European Union is going to break up financially anyway. So all we have to do is do nothing until it self-implodes anyway.
Is that right? Yeah.
This £36 trillion bomb on Deutsche Bank's balance sheet has to explode at some point in time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Do you think the government are playing the game?
So going back, I brought those three points in.
Yeah.
Like, well, Well, Bitcoin pursues something called sound money, and the fiat money world, which is national currencies, which are supervised by central banks, don't. Say, for example, America doesn't know how many dollars it's ever printed.
No.
The European Union has never had an audit. But with Bitcoin, there's only ever going to be 21 million units of Bitcoin divisible by 8 decimal places.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it.
So it can't print money, Bitcoin.
Bitcoin can't print money.
So they can't have inflation, in a sense.
No. But inflation and deflation are becoming arbitrary arguments from an economic perspective.
Mm.
Because we've been printing money ad infinitum since 1971, from when Nixon took America off the gold standard in order to finish financing the Vietnam War so that he could print money to pay the armaments industry,
yep.
We've been living in a disconnected world.
Mm.
So if we think about I'm losing my thread here.
Yeah.
It'll come back to me in a moment.
Yeah, right. Well, so there's an impending crisis or collapse which could
I was trying to explain. So we've been printing all this money now for quite some time.
Yeah.
So why hasn't it been...
It's called financial easing or something.
Quantitative easing. So why hasn't it been rearing its head in what the Americans would call Main Street?
Mm.
Well, in the 1950s in Britain, we spent 50% of our income on food. Now we spend less than 11% of our income on food. Okay? So other things have crept into our cost of living, such as high rents or mortgage to pay for property. So the other thing now is that consumer goods and durables are now cheaper and cheaper than ever before.
Mm.
So people have had more money available to spend on rent and mortgages, particularly in this country.
Mm.
And with more and more automation, the cost of goods is going to become cheaper and cheaper. We are also looking at massive, what's known as demonetarization, from all forms of transport, because it will be in America, where, because they've got a grid network, that more and more self-driving cars come about.
Mm.
So whilst we might not have self-driving cars in Britain for the foreseeable future, what we will be looking at is a complete cannibalism in the American economy, which is bound to have an effect on the rest of the world.
Yeah.
So a lot of the things that I may discuss might be on a global basis, but they're going to have repercussions here in Britain.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well. So the... next. Question number 16.
What's number 16?
Should one stick with Bitcoin alone or invest in some of these other digital currencies that one hears about?
So in the middle of the year, I was 100 Bitcoin up on my gambling. Not in Bitcoin, but in other cryptocurrencies. And I did some things at the wrong times, and I lost those 100 Bitcoin. And if I look back on what I started with, which was initially about £13,500 worth of sterling, if I'd stayed with that, it would have been worth that today. Okay?
How much is that?
No, don't read it out.
No.
Okay. It's a comfortable sum of money.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
So because I mixed my portfolio.
Yeah.
4 weeks bad timing this year, and that's what I currently sit on.
Mm.
Okay. It's climbing up because the other week it dropped down to something chronic.
Yeah.
But I'm with this pot of money and not my pension money. I'm quite a gambler.
Yeah.
And that's gone up by. More than double in the last 4 weeks.
Mm.
Okay, so if I'd actually stuck with Bitcoin, with my original holding for 13,500, you could see that actually has turned into would have turned into as much money as you could ever want. Okay.
Yeah.
So does that answer your question?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, I reasonably know what I'm doing, yeah. And I would suggest that most people just stick with Bitcoin.
Yeah, right, right. Okay, well,
the arch price of the little moment?
14,000 sterling.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we're up to 18 question now, I think.
Yeah,
exactly. As you said, I asked what the risk is, and you said whatever you perceive it to be. Someone's got to be just. There is some risk, and putting in there, one's got to say this definitely has a risk factor to it.
Yes,
but there's a confidence that's coming from you.
I made a few more notes about fiat money, so we've got less and less in tax. So. I bet we all contribute a minimal amount to the perpetuation of the military-industrial complex and the slaughter of children in foreign countries by our governments, to which we have absolutely no idea how they spend it. It's not an open book. That will be an official secret for 75 years. Okay. I work for a company in sales at the moment as my next job when I sort of retire next March. There are 60 international commission-only salespeople. The product is manufactured in China. You know that little tag.
If
you look at all the businesses that are you see what I mean? We've got a major lack of taxation. Or the number of credit export guarantees which are created to supply weapons to dictators with our tax revenue, if they fail to pay, and that will be an official secret for 75 years. Now, the dictators that pay for those arms deals are with IMF loans, which are given for capital projects like water dams or hydroelectricity plants, etc. Now, if the dictator is put in place by the CIA, which happens to be the default, the West now picks up, if they now default, the West picks up the mineral rights in the third world country that they put up as collateral.
Gosh.
Okay? Credit export guarantees to the dodgy dictators prop up the arms manufacturing industry, which is why Lady Diana was so hated. She deemed to question why we are still making landmines and selling them.
Yeah.
To who exactly?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, all this money that that's printed out of thin air is added to the national debt. And the income tax is actually used to just service the interest rate payments. Okay? So, you know, wow. We in the West, you see, we're just pushing the debt forward to the children and the grandchildren who have yet to be born.
Yeah.
And so part of Bitcoin and part of the movement that has moved this whole thing together with people like me is sickened by the system, and this is a way of destroying the system because we're taking the fuel away from it. If you take unsound money away from the establishment, they have got no way of making the bombs.
No, right.
Because we're stopping them from printing the ruddy money.
Yeah. Well, so there's in a way, there's on that last sentence, there's in fact a strong ethic in a way to
it's
use digital.
It's not just about the money.
No.
There's a whole philosophy behind it. Bitcoin at the moment is using up the electrical generating power of Denmark. In 18 months' time, it's likely that it'll use up the electricity generating supply of America. So, why is it that Bitcoin is getting the really nice electrical contracts from the electrical hydro generating? The reason why is because the Bitcoin mining farms are offering those electrical generating companies a 24/7 contract, a guaranteed contract. If you're a distribution network supplying a country, you only want the electricity during the day. You don't want to take the electricity off the generating company at night because they're having to produce it and it's just going to waste. And what happened over the last couple of years in America was that both parties in the electrical generating business, the generators, and the distribution network, because they were being protected by the American government, put no investment into secondary storage. A good example of secondary storage in Britain would be the hydro place in Wales, or I think it was Scotland, where they pump water at the top on cheap electricity during the night and then drop it through the mountain and generate electricity during the day. That's a very good use of cheap electricity during the night, saved up for secondary storage. And what the electrical industry in America has found, that electrical generation through green means in America has become so efficient that we're actually now competing on a unit basis against ordinary gas and nuclear in America, because the green energy for wind and solar in America is starting to make use of people like Elon Musk and their massive city storage battery systems.
Yes, I've heard about these.
Okay.
Yep.
So what Bitcoin is actually going to do, it's done one thing already, and it's advanced the whole nature of chip etching at chip level to produce more efficient computer chips. Now what Bitcoin is going to do through its usage of electricity is actually force the distribution network and networks to invest in secondary storage, which will massively help the green supply of electrical energy globally.
Wow.
Now, some people say that Bitcoin is electrically inefficient. Well, we were having a look at the stats a few days ago, and the gold industry uses something like 400 million barrels of oil to get gold out of the ground, and things like that. The people who say that Bitcoin is bad for the environment are talking out of their backside. So we'll put that one to bed.
So the last couple of questions there about the buying and the selling. So buying, you get given all the good details there, Bitstamp, etc.
Yeah, you can buy from individuals. You can buy from small exchanges like localbitcoins.com. It was quite easy a few years ago, or relatively easy. It's become more and more difficult. You've got some small legal exchanges in this country that will take either an IBAN transfer, a SEPA transfer, or a credit card. Some good ones that I've come across are SpectroCoin and CryptoPay.me.
Yeah.
CryptoPay.me and SpectroCoin.com. The great one about SpectroCoin and CryptoPayMe is that they both offer a debit card, as does Bitstamp. But the really nice thing about the SpectroCoin debit card is that if you don't have any funds on it, they don't charge you. So normally you pay with a CryptoCoin debit card, you normally pay $1 a month or €1 a month to keep the card active. Whereas with the SpectroCoin account, if you don't keep any pounds on it, you don't get charged for the card usage. There's a standing charge. And the other really nice thing about SpectroCoin is if you have another friend with SpectroCoin, you can actually send them Bitcoin to their account with no transaction fees, and it's almost instant. I think the same will be the same for CryptoPayMe as well. It's just I have an account with SpectroCoin. Really good, really like them. Nothing wrong with SpectroPayMe at all either as well. Bitstamp.net, I think their fees for buying by credit card seem a bit steep to me. They're really good if you want to buy in the region of about £1,000 worth or €1,000 worth of currency to buy your Bitstamp with, because you've got a bit of friction to do the SEPA payment that you're looking at. Your bank's probably going to charge you about £15.
Yeah, right.
But if you go to my Cointails website, Cointails.com, I say the best thing to do is if you're going to buy irregular bits of Bitcoin, get yourself an account at Fidor UK. Fidor are a German bank, but they have a UK subsidiary, and you can open a Fidor account for no money, and then you can make a SEPA payment within Europe for £2.50, which is the cheapest way to make a SEPA payment. If you're a UK citizen.
Right.
If somebody knows a cheaper way of doing it, please tell me. I'll put it up on the website. Other than that, they're really good and really friendly on the phone.
Wow. I think you've covered all the last points there, haven't you?
Yeah, so there are lots of there are lots of Visa cards. There's one really nice card that's on the market called the 10X card, which is really, really cool. Most Bitcoin or crypto coin debit cards work on the basis that you have some crypto and you put it onto their online wallet, and then what you have to do is you have to use their exchange to exchange the crypto into pounds. Then you put your pounds onto your debit card, so there's quite a lot of steps involved.
Okay,
and then you can go and spend it. So say with my SpectroCoin card, then I can't check how much is left on my SpectroCoin account unless I go online and go online and look it up. So here we go. Let's have a look at my my crypto debit card.
Oh.
So there's my SpectroCoin one.
Yeah.
No, I haven't got a clue where mine is.
It's at home in the basket, dear.
Wow.
Very nice, thank you.
So it's just like, it's just a regular...
It's a regular debit card. So yeah. That's my SpectroCoin one. So if I want to know the balance for that, I've got to go online and look the ruddy thing up. Even though they've got a wallet on the phone, they haven't linked up the two together.
All right.
Which is a bit useless, to say the least. Now, the 10X coin.
That one had international, and this one doesn't, in the top right-hand corner.
Oh, they're both international.
All right. Okay.
This one's another kettle of fish, is the 10X card. This one's really, really cool.
Join the Revolution, you've got as the
name. Yeah, yeah. Your name doesn't appear on it. It's Join the Revolution. So if I go and have a look at my 10X, when I get some Wi-Fi, because I've switched my phone on. So, I go to the 10X app. Type in my PIN number.
Can I take this with me?
Of course you can.
Right.
And now it tells me what my balance is on my card in real time.
Yeah.
Now, if I go to a shop, I can spend up to £28.66.
Yeah.
And it will go off my phone in real time. I've not asked around with conversions. It's just there. What's the other nice thing? If I go to my phone, I can actually block my card from my phone, so this is locked out. This is the most secure debit card, credit card system going, because I can actually switch that off from my phone or online. That's knacky.
That's something.
Yeah.
Any final word before I close down the
Just be careful. If you decide to get into it, don't put anything in that you can't afford to lose. I'm not a financial advisor, but you can have a lot of fun. The most important thing to realise about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency and the blockchain is that it's the future. If we were to think about the impact it's going to have on society, if we looked at the invention of electricity, the canals, the railways, if we look at a whole load of inventions that have been invented in the last couple of hundred years in human history, they are a smidgen of the impact that the blockchain and Bitcoin are going to have on the human race.
Well, on that word, we'll come to a conclusion. Thank you very much, Mark. It was fascinating.